It means that instead of double sinks in Star Wars services, for me, there should be an ultrasonic bath on each station, 20-minute cycle within the ultrasonic into an optimized washer disinfector. I'm particularly talking about high-risk instruments, so any neuro center I would expect to take in the same challenge as we did, test their current process, and use it as an improvement tool to improve their decontamination process.
Every day, they slay the dragons of healthcare-acquired infections and dangerous microbial fire breathers. While you may not see them during your next hospital stay, they will be there ensuring the safest possible surgeries by skillfully wielding their disinfecting weapons of mass microbial destruction. They are sterile processing professionals. And this is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the global sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we introduce you to the unsung heroes, leaders, and innovators who are fighting dirty around the globe. And now, it's time to go Beyond Clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Mark Campbell, Decontamination Service Manager at the University Hospital of Wales. Mark has been working in healthcare for over 20 years, starting as an operating department practitioner in theaters and then going into theater management, and has been an active decontamination manager for the last 12 years for Cardiff and Vale University Health Board. Mark is very active in continual improvement of decontamination processes, both locally and nationally, representing on the All Wales Assembly Government Decontamination Committee and participating in reviewing and updating national guidance for Department of Health. Mark is currently researching optimization of process and chemistry to effectively remove residue proteins and prion proteins. Hank, this is an exciting episode for Beyond Clean because we love data, and that's what Mark is collecting: data, research, and then sharing potential and actual implications and what that means for sterile processing leaders, not only in the UK, even though he's actively involved there, but also globally, because this research doesn't get isolated to just one region of the world. And so great to be able to converse with somebody who's doing great work in the industry, and especially from another country, and getting that global perspective.
And not only do we love data, Justin, but we love going beyond clean. And so I'm excited to talk about this topic and the implications for the cleaning process in decontamination. And even though we've talked about protein and the impact of all that a couple of different times, they've been from different perspectives, outside looking in primarily. And so I'm super pumped to get the user perspective on this challenge and to hear more about the research that Mark has done.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. It's 2023, and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Mark Campbell, Decontamination Service Manager at the University Hospital of Wales. We're going to talk about protein removal research. And Mark, we love having voices for guests on this show that are outside of the United States because we are the global voice of sterile processing. And so it's always nice to have somebody on the show to give us more of that global view of what's happening in our industry. So thank you so much for joining us and adjusting to the time change for us as well.
No problem. And I thank you for welcoming me to the show to present and discuss some of the work that we've been doing in the UK in Cardiff and Vale on protein residue problems.
You know, protein residue is something we've had a few episodes previously where we've talked about detection technologies and best practices, but I don't think that we've had a discussion specifically around research, which is what makes you such an exciting guest for us on the show today. Can you describe the problem of protein and what sort of, as you identified that problem, what sort of led you towards doing the research?
Okay, so some of the background in the UK compared to the US, there's been strong concerns about prion diseases within proteins. And this came initially from the contaminated beef scare back in the 80s. Over the last two decades, Department of Health in the UK have been concerned of actually what the numbers look like of people who are contaminated with variant CJD or have a high volume of amyloid protein, which can be a carrier of Alzheimer's disease. With these concerns, three research groups were deployed with a brief: is protein residue an issue on processed surgical instruments? Yes or no, basically. And they developed systems to go away to analyze levels of protein on reprocessed surgical instruments. One group in Southampton, one in London, one in Scotland. And they came back to the Department of Health and presented their findings. And all three of them came to the same conclusions that indeed protein residues are present on reprocessed surgical instruments, which is a major concern.
And so knowing that, then obviously the research has been done, the concern has been demonstrated by that research, at least outside of the CSSD. How did that lead you then to do research in your department on this topic?
Okay, so at that point, once the concerns were raised in the Department of Health, the first thing to do was to revise guidance to see if there was anything more we could do from a decontamination perspective to combat protein residues. And I was fortunate enough to actually get invited to the Department of Health, which was a big honour, actually, and to review, listen to the research that had been done and review the guidance to, like I say, to see if there was anything more we could do from a decontamination perspective. The conclusions we came to address this, time is a major factor in decontamination. This isn't alien to anyone, but the time from patient to actual wash disinfector is critical with proteins. The issue is protein adhesion happens very quickly from onset to a surgical instrument. I've heard research state that can be as little as 15 minutes. Once the protein adhesion occurs, particularly if it's prion protein, that can stick like glue, making it very difficult to remove. So the earlier we start the decontamination process, the better. We were going to put a six-hour rule into the document, but we felt maybe that might become unachievable for certain areas, particularly with sterile services that are off-site, for example, where there's a significant delay. If there was to be a delay, the other conversation is we should be doing using systems to keep instruments moist. There's sprays, there's gels, there's bags out there to be able to facilitate this. The other thing was about what level of monitoring should we be using for looking at proteins. Some of the old systems, you've probably heard the term ninhydrin test. It's been deemed not sensitive enough. And the reason for that, it doesn't get down to the level of proteins, which can still cause transmission. And if you're not aware, that can be down to as little as 1 microgram or even into nanograms. So we should be using more sensitive systems to analyze protein. But the main factor that went into the guidance that started my research was a statement that we should be using protein-based PCDs, which are quantifiable. And that's what kickstarted my research program, which I'll explain in a moment.
And it's interesting because you bring up the concept of transmission, and we discussed this in an episode last season with Dr. Larry Muscarella, and really about the difference between transmission and then resulting infection, because we really only track infections. So we don't know necessarily how many transmissions. And when you're talking about some of the concerns about protein residue on reprocessed instruments, some of it is the fact that, and you mentioned Alzheimer's, we may not even know that the infection, quote unquote, I guess in this scenario, has occurred for many, many, many years. It almost lies dormant or it's latent for such an extended period of time that it's hard to get that kind of data. Do you think that that's a big challenge in this scenario as well?
It is indeed. And the reason of the major concern, I should have stated, there were some tissue samples taken in the United Kingdom to try and indicate what is the numbers of carriers of this disease, because like you've rightly said, we're not seeing the fatalities. Variant CJD from symptomatic to fatality is as little as 18 months, but we're not seeing that epidemic. Well, what's happening? Are we seeing long incubation periods for people then to become active and become symptomatic? But more of a concern is if we're seeing amyloid protein transmission, potentially taking Alzheimer's disease from surgical instruments to next patient. In the UK, I don't know in the US, but we have an epidemic with Alzheimer's disease. The thing with Alzheimer's disease, all of us in this podcast will have amyloid protein in our brains. We need it to function. When it becomes a problem is when it becomes infected, and the amyloid actually increases within the brain, overtaking the brain, and brings Alzheimer's. And again, from onset to fatality, maybe 3 to 5 years. But in the UK, it's an epidemic.
I'm interested, Mark, to know the level of understanding and insight from frontline CSSD technicians. Obviously, a lot of these discussions are happening at the higher level, you know, from the government agencies, et cetera, and from the external research teams. And we talked to David Parrott on a previous podcast, you know, talking about CJD in particular, and he was speaking again from the higher level research perspective. But on the front lines, are there particular assumptions or misunderstandings regarding protein removal, or is it pretty well understood, at least in the UK, of what the challenges are and really what the solutions, you know, should be?
Like I've already mentioned the recommendations, and that guidance was released 4 years ago. But people have been slow on the uptake of this. Many departments, so well, this isn't an issue. CJD isn't out there. CJD isn't a problem. Our process is working. Our process is efficient. Our patients are safe. And people haven't actually taken up the guidance as maybe as seriously as they should. I was of the opposite. I heard the research. I was at the Department of Health. I listened to the recommendations and proactively. The question for me is, can we do anything more for the patients within Cardiff and Vale Health Board that are undergoing high-risk surgery, neurosurgical procedures, for example? There is something we can do, and we need to look at our process and look at improvement. But that isn't common across sterile services across the UK. There are many sterile service managers who will sit in their office and watch the trays going round and round, and they're meeting the requirements, and they're meeting the time, and patients aren't being cancelled. But are those instruments safe? That is the question.
I love this topic, and I know that we've got a lot of audience members who are probably sitting here thinking, okay, so if this guy has seen the data, he's seen the research, he's been convinced that there's a problem, now what's the next step? Because I think we have a lot of folks, even if it's not this topic, you know, who get passionate about something, they see the danger, see the risk, and then they think, okay, so there's more work that needs to be done, but what does that look like for a manager or director, you know, to bring this research in-house? So I guess to you, you know, what kind of logistics are involved in even completing or starting a research project like this in a facility?
Okay, so the first question for me regarding protein residues. Okay, so if this is a problem, if they're sticking like glue on instruments, decontamination processes aren't removing them. Okay, I want to see if we can do anything about that. Previous research has indicated using high alkaline detergents, very high alkaline detergents, you can deactivate prion if it's on a surgical instrument. The problem with those products where they were highly aggressive to surgical instruments. You would see corrosion, degradation, and also to the effect that actually they would destroy and wash disinfectors, very corrosive to dosing pumps, etc., etc. So a lot of people backed off that. But no one really has asked the question, okay, so if these protein residues are there, they're stuck on there like chewing gum on the pavement, let's put it a simple way. How can we effectively remove it? So what I did is I asked the question, okay, who can provide me with a protein-based PCD that can replicate human prion protein? And I was approached by a company, I can't name them, they're well out there. And they said, Mark, we've got what we think you're looking for. And they came to me with a protein-based PCD, is a process challenge device for those who don't know. And it's a challenge that we present to the washer disinfector to check for clean and efficacy. The stainless steel strip was impregnated with an ovine homogenate of 1,000 micrograms, a measured amount. And then that was baked on at high temperatures to fix the protein to the strip. I instigated a testing day and brought the tokens in into a validated SSD to challenge our washer disinfectors against a protein-based challenge. That's how we got to it. I also set up a group that included myself, my quality manager, specialist engineer for decontamination, and a chemistry representative to come and witness the testing. And that's how we sort of started.
And so just a little bit, because I'm getting more and more curious here about your background. Did you have a background in research? Like, what was your training prior to coming into the manager position?
Not a background in research. My background is actually operating theatres. Trained as an operating department practitioner, predominantly working in anaesthetics, but surgical scrub as well. And I did that for 20 years, but actually only got into decontamination for the last 12 to 15 years now. When I first got into decontamination, I was maybe had my blinkers on a little bit because I had theatre experience. They said I was the most appropriate person. And I was always a little bit maybe ignorant to decontamination, where the instruments go in the door, they come out the door. But actually, as I got involved in decontamination, I sort of developed more of a scientific approach. I see decontamination as a science, and I'm an individual that will continually ask questions and continually ask about improvement. Is there more we can do for patient safety? That's just my mindset. That's the way I've always been, and that continues, and that's why I've done what I've done now, and I plan to do more work like this as well.
I just love how you describe your thinking process, not only for this particular study, right, but you don't necessarily have to be an expert on research to put in great research and great work just based on getting involved and gaining life experience. And this is the thing that you've done already on this interview, but you described to us the good questions that you would ask that would lead you to trying to find some answers. And that's how research happens. So I just love the fact that we went through that and kind of the nuts and bolts of it. But I also want to talk about the study itself. And maybe you can go over some of the highlights of what you found as you conducted that research.
Okay, so I'll try and keep it brief. So you know the background, from where we started to where we are now, it's taken me 3.5 years, okay? So I'm going to summarize it in 5 minutes. Basically, when the tokens that I explained, when we brought them in for the testing day, I put them into the washer disinfector. A standard wash process, cold pre-rinse below 40 degrees for 1 minute, into a wash phase at 60 degrees using mild alkaline detergent, and then into the rinse stage, and then we aborted the cycle as per a soil test in the guidance. However, when I removed the protein-based PCDs, they had not broken down the protein at all, not even any sign of breaking of the protein. And at that stage, I said, wow, we got a problem. These are our washers that we're using for high-risk instruments with potentially infected protein. We're not removing protein. So the research started then. The first thing was, can we optimize the washer? So we tried different chemistries. We tried longer wash periods. We even tried additional phases, single wash phase, double wash phase, even triple wash phase. We weren't getting anywhere. Still, we were seeing continual failures on this protein challenge. And at that stage, many sterile service managers, I've heard it myself, they could have turned around and said, well, this challenge is too difficult. This challenge, we're using a validated washer disinfector. We're not going to use this type of challenge because none of our washers will be running. And like I've explained, maybe I think a little bit more outside of the box than maybe others. And I knew the importance of beating this protein challenge. So we continued. The next thing was, I had a light bulb moment, and I said to the research group, I said to the testing team, I said, actually, we're not testing our true process here. Now, I don't know what you do in the US, but where we have a delay from theatres to wash a disinfector, in my department, we do a lot of manual pre-cleaning. So the instruments will come in, we soak them in the sink, we'll manually scrub them, rinse them into a wash disinfector. So I said, let's just try and replicate that manual clean by soaking the tokens first in an enzymatic for 10 minutes, i.e. like instruments in a sink, then present them to the washer. When we actually did that, just looking at the tokens in the receiver, in the enzymatic, I could see visual breakdown of the protein occurring as the enzymes were active. And then when we presented them to the washer after that soaking, we got pass. So I knew at that stage we were on to something.
So if I can tie this together again, you know, from the U.S. perspective, is at least because you're right to allude to the difference in how we currently do washer testing. And to my knowledge, you know, that process of bringing the tokens or the test strips through the manual cleaning stage or the pre-cleaning stage into the washer is not something that's currently done. So out of this research then, what implications does that finding in particular, or even the broader research, you know, walking away from this experience, how has it changed the way that you view managing your decontamination department? And on a broader scale, you know, what does this mean for the rest of us?
When we got to that stage, if we can remove manual cleaning for staff, we will. You know, there's potential aerosols being generated, you're scrubbing through sinks, they're exposed to chemistry. But we know it works as long as they're wearing appropriate PPE. But if we can get that within the wash disinfector, that's where we need to be. So what I then tried was extending a pre-rinse cycle to 10 minutes to replicate the sink, dosed it with an enzymatic, went into the rinse, went into a wash stage. And we were getting better results at that point. I had four tokens in at a time. Out of the four, I was regularly seeing three pass in, two pass in, but it was still inconsistent. Then the final stage, I came to a conclusion. I know ultrasonic activity is very good at breaking down protein. I've seen research to support that. So I said, let's instigate an ultrasonic cycle before the washer and let's see what happens. I put them in the sonic for 20 minutes with an enzymatic in the bath, took them out, put them in the washer disinfector, ran the cycle as the optimized wash cycle. When I did that, we got 0000. And when I say zero, I mean zero nanogram. I know that because I have a system to measure protein residues in the clean room. And we can put the token in, we spray it. The spray fluoresces any protein. If you've spoken to David Perrett, you'll understand that. And I was getting a reading of zero nanogram. To ensure the research was robust, I had to do repeated testing. And to date, I've done over 150 tokens with this process. It's zero nanogram, zero nanogram, zero nanogram. Similar testing is being done in China, in the US, in Australia, and no one is achieving these results like we've achieved in Cardiff and Vale. So there's a lot of focus on this work now. And what, in answer to your question, what does this mean? It means that instead of double sinks in Star Services, for me, there should be an ultrasonic bath on each station, 20-minute cycle within an ultrasonic into an optimized washer disinfector. I'm particularly talking about high-risk instruments, so any neuro center I would expect to take in the same challenge as we did, test their current process and use it as an improvement tool to improve their decontamination process. The next stage on, just to go on slightly, for me, research doesn't stop, okay? For me, the next question, okay, we've tested using ovine protein. Does human protein, i.e. prion protein, behave the same? I've been accepted to access tissue of infected brain tissue from a human brain bank. We have them in the UK, where patients are asked to donate their brain if they're suffering from these awful diseases. And I've gained access to tissue. We're planning another research project starting in the summer in a controlled area away from sterile services. But we will impregnate tokens with human disease, use the same type of baking on so we have the same challenge, use the same process. And at that stage, we will be able to present those findings, possibly Department of Health, to prove that actually with optimization of decontamination processes, we can actually remove prion protein disease.
Wow. So I'm totally looking forward to that next stage, obviously, but I'm still sitting in shock on this current project. And I just want to be clear that I heard you correctly, or that I interpreted the impact of this. So what we're walking out of this interview hearing is that through this process and through this test, you have optimized nearly all manual cleaning out of your process. And so it's almost a completely mechanical cleaning process. Is that the implication here?
This is correct. 20-minute ultrasonic cycle instead of a manual clean. And then the wash process, we should extend the pre-rinse and dose the pre-rinse. Then we go into rinse. And then the wash phase, type of chemistry. I've tested many chemistries. We should be using mild alkaline enzymatic. With enzymatics, it's very important that the temperature ranges are correct, so the enzymes are most active. If you follow that process, you will effectively remove protein residues.
Wow. This is really exciting research, and that's a pretty big deal, Mark. I mean, that's no small claim, I would say. And so I want to say kudos to you. Congratulations on the great work. And it does have a great deal of implications on the industry. You've been an awesome guest. I think you're going to come back for more interviews. And I just want to, well, I want to tell you, I don't know if you've been on a podcast before, but you really were very smooth. So well done. And I suspect we'll be reaching out to you again for more.
Thanks, Justin. I appreciate having me on the show.
And so just as a call to action or something informational for the listeners, where would they be able to find this information? Are you going to publish it? And if so, where would it be published?
Yeah, the work to date, I've done an article for the Clinical Services Journal. It's the first journal that I've been asked to do an article for. That's actually going out. There's an April decontamination issue in the United Kingdom. If people want to source that paper from myself direct, if you're from the US, they can get me on my email, mark.campbell@wales.nhs.uk. And I'm happy to email them a PDF version of the article. So it'll explain it a bit more in a bit more detail and explain from where we started to where we got to now and how we got there in a bit more detail. So there's following publications going out in the Engineers Journal in the United Kingdom. I mean, I'm very active in conference. I've been presenting this work up until coronavirus hit. Unfortunately, the brakes have been put on that, but I'm a regular speaker at conferences in the UK and have actually been invited to international conference as well to present the work.
I could see us inviting you to one of our Beyond Clean conferences. So I just want to thank you again so much. Great job on the show today.
Okay, thanks very much.
That was Mark Campbell, Decontamination Service Manager at the University Hospital of Wales, talking about protein removal research. And Hank, I know one thing that gets talked about a fairly decent amount is the fact that, yes, there's this protein residue, but we also know that there may be opportunity for cross-contamination in the ultrasonic bath if we're not following the recommended practices of draining and refilling, as well as in, you know, the sinks and decon. And those things all occur to me in conversations like this. And so Mark's research is just so important. And as we talked about and mentioned during the podcast, but a lot of this prion discussion, or even we look at the latent potential transmission resulting in infection, like you see with Alzheimer's and some of the research and the studies that are indicating that how well the instruments are being decontaminated, clean, sterilized. All of that is food for thought. And I don't know that there is enough research in our industry to drive some of those decisions. So it's great to see that that is beginning to happen.
Yeah, Justin, you bring up the topic of research, and one of our primary commitments as Beyond Clean is to promote and highlight the research that has already been done, the little that has been done, but then also encourage more to be done. And I love this story in particular because Mark is a user. He's in the department. He's leading a department on the front lines. He understands all of those implications that maybe researchers from the outside wouldn't necessarily have a pulse on. And the fact that we can promote that insight on this episode in the broader context of what we're trying to do through Beyond Clean in promoting research, even through the work that our chief medical officer, Dr. Peter Nickel, is doing as well, to bring research into these departments to tackle the real-life challenges that we're confronting day-to-day. I hope this really encourages some audience members out there to say, hey, I see the problem. I can do this research. I can bring together this collaborative team and get it done and follow the way that Mark laid out. And even, you know, perhaps reach out to him for advice on how to get your own research started in your own sterile processing department.
Yeah, absolutely. And help us all get the answers that we need to continue driving the sterile processing industry forward. That's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support Beyond Clean by subscribing on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Hank and myself, thank you for listening to this week's episode of Beyond Clean.